Begin.
Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language. You're listening to the weekly show on Discourse.
I'm back.
We're all back. I'm Morgan Nickel, big mouth dickhead from the internet.
And I'm Dylan Reeve, but you can call me Johnny Big Steps.
Hey, Johnny Big Steps, how have you been?
Pretty good.
How's the house of R?
R?
Well, I meant to say surname, isn't it?
Oh, I see Reeve. Ah,
house of D, then. All right, if you prefer. The house of D.
House of D. Yeah, it's good.
How are those kids? How's that wife?
Although, a bit rough earlier in the week.
Oh,
we lost a gazebo.
You lost a gazebo?
We lost a gazebo. There was some wind, and there was not lost, but, you know, it's dead.
Oh, it was like a pipe and canvas sort of a one.
It was an easy up style gazebo, and unfortunately some wind and some torque and some metal fatigue.
Yeah, have you considered putting up a shade sail? Because you can make those tolerant of pretty decent winds.
Yeah, actually, I have considered putting up a shade sail. I haven't done it, but for next summer I might consider it.
Mm. It's always very, well, I mean, I don't know what the layout is of where you'd put it up, but it's always very satisfying concreting up
good.
A post.
We'd have a very good location for shade sailing.
Mm. I like them a lot, actually, shade sails, much better than gazebos. I've had the same thing, actually, only, I think, in January. We lost a gazebo and it like bent pipes and
Well, to be fair, I've also had one blow along the backyard and smash up against the fence. Mm. Different gazebo, but that one was recoverable.
Yeah, it's almost unforgivable for it to happen because it's not like the wind is ever a terrible surprise.
No, but, you know, you peg them down, you think, oh yeah, that's good, and then especially it had just rained, and so the ground had softened a little bit, and suddenly the pegs just popped out.
Yeah.
So. Ah, bloody hell, man. Jesus, goodness. This is why I'm not allowed to build roads.
Yeah. How about earthquakes? Is that another reason why?
Either.
Yeah. Apparently Auckland can build earthquakes. We didn't know we could.
Factor. Maybe the earthquake had loosened the earth, allowing the pegs to come loose.
So did you feel it, the earthquake? I'm pretty sure you did.
I should make a claim to EQC.
Yeah. Did you have some of that, what was it we were called when they had the, liquefaction, did you have that?
Well, the ground was a bit damp.
Yeah.
Maybe that could have been the rain, but maybe it was liquefaction.
All your Christmases may have come at once.
Yeah.
All you have to do is get in the line behind all of Christchurch.
Oh, I think they'd have to handle it separately, a different event.
Yeah. And Auckland should actually be able to queue jump, frankly.
Yeah, I think so.
I think we deserve that. If nothing else, we deserve that. I mean, we're not allowed to have public transport that works.
Well, no one is.
Maybe no one in New Zealand is.
Yeah, no one in New Zealand's allowed to have public transport that works. It's not.
So I was looking at, we may have spoken about this before, but I was looking at the map about where trains go, and I was like, where can you go without taking a car? Because, you know, there's a...
Nowhere.
Well, almost nowhere, but I mean, there is a train line that goes up to Whangarei.
Actually, I don't know how many trains go that far.
Yeah.
I was in Whangarei a couple of weeks ago and saw some trains on the train line in Whangarei, but as far as I know, they only really went to about Wellsford. They take logs back and forth up that part of the railway.
But I mean, it's exclusively a freight line at the moment, but does that mean it has to always be a freight line?
Well, I can hear commuter trains from where I am.
Yeah.
Like, I can hear them, but I'd have to walk. I have to walk about 4K to get to one. No, it's about 2.5K actually, I think.
And would that take you any closer to work?
It would take me 2.5K closer to work.
Hmm.
The train would take me further away from work. But if I worked in the city, it might take me closer.
Right, but you don't, do you?
No, and if I did, I'd have to go through Newmarket.
Hmm.
Not ideal.
It's going to be better, though, going through Newmarket than it currently is. Once the hypothetical future central rail link is completed. Going through Newmarket won't have to do that stop and reverse thing, which is currently kind of spoils the whole experience.
At some point in one of the school holidays or something like that, we're going to take the kids on the train into town.
Oh, it's good fun. Trains are great.
Kids love trains.
Yeah, trains are great. I think adults should love trains as well. Trains should be lovable.
We love trains. Obviously, I love trains, but it's a delicate thing when you're an adult. You want to be careful because it's just a matter of time. It's just between liking trains and then suddenly turning up down the railway station with a notebook. It's a fine line.
Yeah. You don't want to be a train spotter.
his train spotting notebook once.
Your father actually does that?
Well, no, he doesn't do it now, but when he was a kid, they used to, I guess, he used to go down to the train station and write down the engine numbers of the trains that went past.
What?
When they used trains in the 1960s, I guess.
What? Oh, my God. There are things that happen on YouTube that mean you can experience some of these funny little subcultures, like the train horn guys. Have you seen any of that stuff where they stand on the side of the tracks and they record trains in specific locations where they often blow? I don't know what their terminology is. Express? I don't know. What do you think they say? Perform? I bet they say perform.
Have you seen the there's a juice train video. There's this Tropicana orange juice train that goes from, I want to say, Miami up to like New Jersey.
Yeah,
taking juice concentrate.
Mm.
And it's a famous train. Like, it runs every, I think it runs six times a week or something.
Oh, so it's like a tanker sort of a thing.
Yeah, it's just a huge long train full of orange juice concentrate.
Wow.
But there's a video, there's a point of view time lapse first person video that runs that's on YouTube, and it's a really cool, well produced video, and it's got quite a neat little behind the scenes about how they did it, because it's also, it's a full recording that goes the entire time and speeds up and slows down at different points. But there's a point just after it leaves where you see it goes through a level crossing, and you see literally dozens of people around taking photos of it and video of it and stuff.
Awesome.
Just because it's a famous train.
Yeah. I love those people.
Yes.
Those people who, I mean, it's a simple desire, right? To see interesting trains.
There's, it's funny when you watch, I have from time to time in random YouTube surfing come across various train videos taken by train fanciers, and they get very excited.
Yeah.
And you're like, how can you be excited about this? But, oh, isn't that sweet? But you're insane.
But it's a harmless insanity.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's not like that.
It's probably a harmless insanity.
It's not like they're off-duty Los Angeles police officers with a hobby of taking photos of other people's small children at fairs.
Or off-duty New York police officers planning to kidnap people and eat them, but yeah.
That guy, I think he's got people have the wrong end of the stick on that poor bastard. I mean, he did have quite detailed plans on how to kidnap and consume people's corpses, including, I think, his wife. But I just think it was just a harmless fantasy. He was just weird.
He got convicted.
Yeah, I don't think he was ever going to do it. It's just one of those weird ones where, someone's interests, which weren't ever going to overlap into kind of, really taking action, just went over a line, And I think it's an unspoken line, though, isn't it? Talking about eating after murdering your wife and
preparing. I think it's probably writing down the plans, maybe.
Yeah.
I'm sure my wife and I, and I'm sure you do this all the time with your friends, have made plans for how we, have discussed plans for how we would kill someone, dispose of their body.
What?
Not a specific someone, just a generic someone.
Of course I've discussed that. If the purpose is just to kill some random person, then it just has to be someone you don't know. That's the trick. But the reality is, why would you want to kill someone that you don't know? Obviously, you're going to kill someone. I mean, the person that you'll want to kill the most is going to be someone that you know, surely.
Was that, that's quite a famous case, I think, of two people basically swapping their victims.
Oh, killing their wives.
Yeah, I think, no, it was wives killing their husbands, I think. So they just kind of swapped over and killed each other's husbands.
Yeah.
Pretty sure. I'm not making that up. I might be. Can't promise anything.
Yeah. So there was an earthquake.
Yeah, I heard about that.
I was standing in the kitchen, and I thought that, and the pantry doors started rattling. And I was like, huh? And then I figured that it must just be the washing machine on spin or something. And then I was like, no way do these normally rattle. And then there was the finishing jolt of the earthquake, and I was like, wow.
Wasn't there two events?
I didn't feel the first one.
They're about 2 minutes apart.
Yeah, I didn't feel the first, or I wasn't aware of feeling the first one. So, like, a few months ago, there was one which Auckland was made fun of. Actually, it must have been many months ago, because it was when we were recording the previous season. So that must have been a long time ago.
It was well before Christmas.
Yeah. And that one, to me, just felt like a really strong gust of wind. But this time, I mean, there was just no mistaking it for anything else. It was really very exciting.
I felt the last one. I didn't feel this one. I feel so disappointed.
Yeah, I liked it. I kind of... It's, that's I mean, I think I've probably felt quite a lot of very, very, very small earthquakes down in the Wairarapa, and only that one gust of wind one. And then this one was by far the best. It was very, I liked it. I really liked it.
Didn't make it to where I am, or at least not such that I could feel it.
Yeah.
And I was aware of someone mentioned the first one before the second one happened, I think.
Yeah.
I saw some people mentioning the first one before the second one happened on Twitter, so I was kind of aware of earthquakiness, and I would have felt a second one had it.
Yeah. Well, the first one apparently was 3.1, and that's like less than it's like a ninth as strong as a 3.9 or something. I'm sorry, I just did really sketchy maths in my head. Yeah, like is it every three it doubles? It's something like, or is that decibels?
There's decibels, but no one understands this stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe. No one actually. I don't think anyone.
Probably no one.
But it was interesting.
Yeah.
To see, and of course, the Twitter, the moment you know there's an earthquake is when three people on Twitter at the same time suggest there was an earthquake.
Yeah,
only one person said it, then it was probably a truck.
I raced for the Twitter. I raced for it. I was like, yes, I've got to tweet about this, and those Christchurch guys will be like, bleh, bleh, bleh. But actually, everyone was quite well behaved because they, I think after the gust of wind one, I think they've just learned to appreciate that, it's kind of exotic to us. We're not saying, oh, wow, the world is about to end. We're saying, hey, this interesting thing happened.
Christchurch, they were all like, oh, there's been an earthquake. Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah, that one was,
Too soon?
It was very easy to not know how serious it was, wasn't it?
Well, the first one, it was serious, but not that serious.
Yeah. Yeah, it just kept getting worse. Good old Chicha. Good old Chicha. So this could, depending on how you count, this is episode 4.07 in the modern discourse numbering schema. This could be the 100th episode. I think it's the 98th. As long as you exclude the Barcamp Special 2.09 BCA. Because there was a 2.09, and on the same day I released the Barcamp one, which... Why did I release it as on the same day? Maybe because it was it bad?
You had to redub your entire voice? No, that wasn't Barcamp, was it? That was WordCamp?
The Barcamp one, yes, there were audio problems. Unmonitored recording, man. Basically, I don't know what I'm doing.
Anyway, so this might be the 100th episode, or it might be the 98th.
It's almost certainly not the 100th. If you were probably being reasonable, it's the 99th. But as long as we exclude, I think if there are two episodes with the same number, then they have to be treated as one episode.
Well, I think we just take special episodes out entirely.
Well, then I reckon there's 98. Okay. And if you take the zero episodes out, then there's actually probably about 95.
I think we'll leave the zero episodes in.
The first zero episode, though, it was definitely...
That was a trial episode.
It definitely was a trial episode.
Oh, God. It's
pretty much we can declare the 100th whenever the hell is convenient for us.
Counting is hard.
Up to like 5 weeks from now.
Well, I reckon basically what we do is we just declare when it's 100th episode. So if we go past 100, we just skip the number until we have time to do the 100th episode in quotes. I do the air quotes. You can't see them.
Yeah.
Actually, here, look, I'll do them closer to the microphone. You might be able to hear them.
Oh, wowee, you've got fingers like a ninja.
Yeah. Ninja fingers, like that's what they call me. Ninja fingers.
Wow.
And Johnny Big Steps.
You know, that's the... I haven't seen the story that Johnny Big Steps thing is for, that Billy Big Steps, but I love the sound of it. So that's what the police codenamed Kim.com.
GCSB. I'm not sure who came up with that code name, but that was their code name for Kim.com.
Billy Big Steps.
The only thing I can think is that the person, whoever, spy or detective was in charge of coming up with that name had been, like, reading his kids a bedtime story the night before when he was in charge of coming up with nicknames.
Yeah.
And, and then Johnny Twinkle Toes kicked the ball into the goal and everyone was happy. Good night, darling. Ooh, Billy Big Steps. Yes, perfect. That's what I think happened.
It is though, perfect. It has to be said. I'm very impressed by that one, Billy Big Steps. Even though it
based
is a
on,
bit
based
fattest.
On the tweets I see, I get the impression that that Kim.com's also quite tickled by it.
Mm. Billy Big Steps. He should change his name to Billy Big Steps. It's a way better name than Kim.com.
I think so. It's more Web 3.0.
Yeah.
Stepping away from that whole internet thing being less this obviously internet-y.
So Billy would have no I in it, probably.
15 minutes.
Billy.
Yeah.
Billy. Billy Big Step.
Yeah, we don't do vowels.
It'll be ste.ps.
Oh, yeah.
Billy. Billy Big Step. Dot piss. That's how it'd go. That's exactly how it'd be pronounced as well.
Is there a dot ps?
I don't know. Probably.
The URL shortener? The Welsh URL shortener?
No.
There's no way I can possibly pronounce it. But there's a Welsh place name that's the longest place name in Wales.
Yeah.
And it's absurd. Like Welsh it always is. There was.
Oh, I see. It's called Garrick Wernrob Lanty Sliogogogo.ch.
That one. Yeah.
That's so cool.
I reckon we should register the New Zealand one, which I can't remember the name of now, and use that as a URL shortener for New Zealand, which is the really long place name that I can't remember the name of at all. But you can actually, it's like, I think it ends in .hu. I think it ends in .hu, so you can register in the .hu domain. It'd be great. I'd shorten my URLs with that.
All right, I'm making one now. All right. There we go. All right, here you go, chat room. Here we go. It's a shortened URL for you. That's a good one.
For a moment there, I thought I saw the word Robin Williams in there, but it's not.
Wow. It does have some kind of, it does ring that bell, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought we might be able to get Robsy on this week, but.
I see. Look, Snap Internet's joined the chat room because I was talking on the internet about
changing to a better ISP.
On Twitter. No, not a better ISP. I'm quite happy with Orcon overall, and my unlimited plan works pretty well. But I want VDSL, and Orcon don't do VDSL.
I am very happy with my Orcon, but everything. I should probably kick them out of the chat room before. No, that won't disconnect them from the stream. So it doesn't seem like I'm stroking anyone's butt cheeks. I've heard only really good things about Snap.
I think it's that thing, it's kind of like, Orcon used to be, they're a small ISP, so they can still be quite customer focused.
This Orcon sale.
Oh, yeah, who are they? Yeah, anyway. Do we know anything about that, or is it still all just speculation and conjecture?
Oh, I don't really care about the facts. All I care about is the expectation that, however it is now, it's going to be worse after a sale because it's currently owned by the government. And even while being owned by the government, they are outsourcing the call center and so on to the Philippines or wherever.
Yeah,
what's it going to be like when it needs to return a profit to a private owner? It's going to be worse. They're going to invest less in the service, and they're going to try and cut their costs, to the bone. It's probably a good thing
to be
for the smaller players.
The whole overseas call center thing frustrates me. The times I've had to deal with the Auckland call center recently has been an unsatisfying experience. Yeah. I had this problem with my voicemail where I couldn't actually dial in and get my voicemail because the PIN number would never work.
Right.
And hilariously, after many, many attempts to go through the Auckland call center and then trying the same things over and over again, despite me yelling at them that we'd already tried those things and they weren't going to help and they didn't know what they were talking about.
Yeah.
The person who solved my problem with the Orcon voicemail was one of my oldest childhood friends, who is a voicemail engineer at Orcon, or a voiceover IP engineer at Orcon. Turns out the DTMF settings on my phone were wrong.
Dump the motherfucker. DTMF.
DTMF, that's exactly what that stands for, not anything else.
If you're an Ask Metafilter user, you'll... You'll recognize that. I'm apprehensive about any changes to ISPs in New Zealand because so far, I mean, I've got a bigger cap than ever before, even though I still haven't moved over to the unlimited one. But in kind of almost every other, and it's still really exactly the same speed as it has been for several years. But kind of in every other respect, it feels to be more fragile and kind of worse. Like the support is all worse than it was.
Generally with Internet New Zealand or specifically with Orcon?
I don't know about other ISPs. I can only really speak about Orcon because I've been an Orcon customer for several years now.
I get the feeling that it is, though. I think, like, from when you and I used to work in the internet industry, the internet has become a much more mainstream thing, and everyone is on the internet.
Yep.
And the technology is much more opaque.
Yeah.
So I suspect that all that support stuff and all those sorts of things, I think they probably are more complex and sort of simpler at the same time. Like when I called the Orcon Help Desk, it was quite clear they just worked through a script. And that was a lot harder for us when we were doing it in the old days because...
It was a wild west. Everything was crazy.
Yeah, everything was crazy. There was no, you couldn't just reset your router because that wasn't a fucking option. You had to, you know, reinstall WinSock in Windows 3.
And that's so why, back then, to work on an ISP help desk, you had to be a pretty fucking enthusiastic internet user. You had to really know your shit. As El Nair in the chat rooms just pointed out, you had to know things like, you know, modem AT codes.
Oh, God. Yeah,
and I mean, I remember knowing a bunch of those strings for different modems. And
yeah, different modems. And you could do, you'd reset different parts of the modem and change the protocols. They would change the, Man, oh.
Yeah, you're breaking up a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think that stuff's the same anymore. No. I think it's a lot simpler. And I think people now just need to be able to talk on the phone and read the script.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that might be true, but I don't call the help desk unless something's actually wrong, and I can probably describe what's wrong pretty well. I mean, given that I have been working as an internet professional since 1996.
There's almost...
Bro, you're breaking up so bad. Why are you breaking up so bad?
I don't know.
Do we need to let's I'm just going to quickly drop the Skype and get you. Oh, have you got a USB headset or something? Is that what you're using right now?
Maybe.
Is it?
Yes.
Would you unplug it and replug it in, please, my man?
Sure, it'll probably kill the Skype.
Well, all right, we'll reconnect the Skype if that happens. Skype has never gone wrong for us before. I hope you're already started. Yeah, it's gone all nice and quiet, so I bet he's already started.
You there?
Yep, I'm here.
Am I better?
Well, it's hard to tell because it wasn't constant. You were going all kind of computer talking.
Carry on and you see what happens.
Yep. So I want to get into the news now. Even though actually it's probably better for us to just continue.
I was going to say there's nothing more frustrating than calling an ISP's help desk and feeling like you know a lot more than the person you're talking to.
I have had that feeling for a very long time. I would like to only start at level 2 and then go up from there.
Yeah, there should be a way. I'd like to be with an ISP office. I'll quiz snap on this.
I'll tell you what that way is. You make a little bit of noise on Twitter, and they help you out. And I've been very, very happy with the service that Orkon's been providing me. But I know that I've been getting that extra help because of Twitter, not necessarily because my tiny followership, which is about 1/5 of yours now. It scares them, but just because I am kind of follow and am followed by several people from Orkon, and so you know it helps me jump the queue a little bit. So my experience there,
well, it's a squeaky wheel thing, and Twitter's great for the squeaky wheel thing. It does feel like you're cheating a little bit sometimes when you use the squeaky wheel thing. But
I'll cheat every time, and it's not cheating. It's actually not cheating. All wheels should be greased.
Yep.
If your customers are greasy, they never squeak.
So there we go.
That is a fact of the universe.
God damn it.
That is a fact of the universe. More grease, less squeaks. Seriously. Antipot.
Yep. Did we talk about this on here? I just don't understand why companies don't do nice things for their customers.
Yeah.
Like things that cost them sweet fuck all. Why don't they just do them to make everyone happier? Especially in Twitter world where when people aren't happy, they make it really clear and loud to lots of their friends.
Yeah. Like having an offline mode in some city and cities that are larger than one.
Well, it was
that,
but it was airlines that I was talking about specifically. I think I've mentioned this on the show before, but it was just, I just don't understand why airlines insist on charging as many fees as they can to their clients for any arbitrary changes.
Yeah. I think because it's a really marginal business with dodgy margins at the best of times.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a business that is where PR disasters become massive quickly. Like, just be good. Be nice to your customers and they'll come back to you and tell other people that you're good.
Like fat Kevin Smith getting thrown off a plane.
Like fat Kevin Smith being thrown off a plane. Like everything that Jetstar ever does. Man, working in Jetstar PR department must be a nightmare.
You know what? There's a really easy way to short-circuit the problems that some people have with Jetstar, and I'm gonna clue you in on it.
I'm going to suspect this might be related to the approach I already have with flying Jetstar.
I'll tell you what it is. No one's ever thought of this before. Here it goes. Turn up early.
Oh, okay. I was just...
The end.
My approach was don't fly Jetstar.
Well, sometimes you don't have much choice.
I've never had a problem with Jetstar because I've never flown Jetstar.
I've never had a problem with Jetstar, and I've flown with Jetstar, I think, 3 times. I prefer Air New Zealand, of course, because, you know, who doesn't? I've never flown, what was it called, Pacific Blue, even though I had a ticket. Wow, boy, oh boy, why would that be? It's because they are completely hopeless. And I ended up, just to escape, an 8-hour wait while they were trying to get me back from Christchurch to Auckland on a pre-booked ticket, naturally. Instead of waiting 8 hours for them to get their thumbs out of their buttholes, I went and paid Air New Zealand, and I was on a plane within about 20 minutes.
I'm flying Virgin Australia, which is basically Pacific Blue, I think, to LA, except the flight from Sydney to LA.
Is it going
to
be a Virgin America plane, though, or something like that?
No, it's a Delta plane. From Sydney to LA, it's a Delta plane, and from Auckland to Sydney, I don't know what the hell it is, whether it's Virgin Australia or Pacific Blue or... I've heard
pretty good things about Virgin in the States. They seem to be going for a particular kind of a market. So they're not really an expensive airline, but they try and have fun, sort of. I think they're not as good as Air New Zealand, though, even so. Air New Zealand, who have got quite a good reputation internationally.
They do. Yeah. So there was some news or something you want to talk about? That wasn't an earthquake.
Well, are there? Is it? Lots of the things I've got are not news because I'm seeing an awful lot of / favicons in my Chrome news window. The first story, this one's from Boing Boing.
I bet I've got a lower / user ID than you.
I'm absolutely certain you have. I created an account and I can't remember what it was.
Oh, that's a shame.
I'm pretty sure I created an account, and that would have been in about 1996. Seven.
I think /dot came out in 98. Maybe not. Anyway.
I met Commander Taco.
Did you?
Yep. I met him in Wellington. Yeah. So obviously I didn't create an account in 1996 then. If it was after 1998, then I probably didn't.
Oh, it started in September 97. There you go.
Right. I wouldn't be surprised if you had a lower number than me. Very few people, not no one, has a lower Air New Zealand Airpoints number than Selena does.
What's that then?
It's 2 digits.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you what it is though. Antipot, GOP assemblyman. This is a story that usually happens with...
Antipot in this case is pot being...
Marijuana.
Anti-marijuana, yep.
This is a New York State Republican assemblyman. His name is Steve Katz. He sits on the GOP Assembly's Alcoholism and Drug Abuse Committee and on its Higher Education Committee, although that's less ironic. Last year, he voted against a bill for legalizing medical marijuana. And this year, he was caught by in a routine traffic stop with a baggie of marijuana.
Hilarious.
Now, usually, it's right-wing... conservative Christians that shout a lot and thump their Bibles that get caught with a dick in their mouth, but this guy caught with a doob.
Yep. It's always the same though, isn't it? It's whatever they take a ridiculous moral stance on, they get caught doing.
Yep. Basically, anyone who takes a really strong antagonistic position on something, you've got to suspect them. You've immediately got to suspect them, don't you?
Yes.
I mean, I think that's just it's another rule of the universe. It's the law. Other laws are politicians get themselves in trouble. If you tell someone else, some other MP particularly, that their bad memory is a problem, probably you better make sure that you've declared the $50,000+ that you've got in an overseas bank account. Mm. So David Shearer accidentally forgot. We don't actually, I think, still know exactly how much the deposit is because all we know is it's over $50,000 because that's a trigger point. But he said the US bank account was used for his salary from the UN and he'd forgotten about it. Wouldn't it be nice if you could forget about $50,000?
I would love to forget $50,000.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Oh, there's that $50,000 I had. Oh, dear.
The best little windfall I've had was only about $2,000. It was when I overpaid my my student loan. My student loan was very low. It was a very small loan. And I blasted through it. And I didn't know that I'd blasted through it because it was just coming out of my my pay packet every week. And then someone from IRD or somewhere called me and said, hello, did you know you've overpaid your this and that? And I was like, sweet. And they said, and now you've got $2,000 owing. How would you like that? And I said, in my bank.
You said, small, unmarked, non-sequential bills, or I will kill you.
Or I'm going to burn your fucking offices down. Yeah,
and that's why you don't pay tax anymore.
You know what? Actually, there have been taxes that I was able to get off just by talking to people. It turns out that fringe benefit tax, you can get it turned off really easily. You just say, oh, I'm probably not going to have much of that. And they'll switch it off. Like, there's a flag. Well, I mean, there might not be anymore. But in 2000 or 2001, when I started my first business, and I spoke to my my extremely friendly and helpful IRD, I don't know, case officer or whatever that'd be called, I asked if they could turn off FBT, and he clicked a box, and FBT was turned off, and I didn't have to worry about it again. That was awesome.
Yeah, I got a bill the beginning of this tax year, I guess, for provisional tax. Like, yeah. Here's the provisional. I rang them up, and I'm like, no, I'm not going to be paying that. I'm not going to need to pay provisional tax. And they're like, okay,
yeah,
good.
Mm. They can be very reasonable, IRD. I mean, I don't know what they're like now because, you know, I haven't actually had to...
It can be a pain in the ass getting hold of them. You do sometimes have to hold a long time, but I've never had a bad phone call with the IRD. The people I've talked to have always been really helpful, really knowledgeable, and very willing to assist.
Yeah.
They're great.
So, Electronic Arts are the publisher for SimCity, and I think we spoke a little bit about that last week.
We did, and then you went on Twitter and said, oh, this game sucks.
It does. Did I have it already back then?
You had it, but you'd barely played it at that point.
Right. I mean, it's all right.
It's small, and it's shit, and it's not as interesting as the previous one, and it's half-written, was the gist that I got from your tweets.
That's entirely accurate. But here's the bright side, and I bought two copies because I wanted to play multiplayer with Cell.
Or Natch.
Naturally. So I'm like $170 deep in that goddamn game. Like a sucker... But Electronic Arts, because of how badly the launch has gone, it's a piece of shit. They really haven't finished so much of it. But they're giving away a game to every owner from their portfolio. But it includes new release games like Dead Space 3 and Mass Effect 3, and I don't know how new all of these things are, but one of the games that they're giving away is SimCity 4 Deluxe Edition.
Awesome.
That'll be the previous one.
Yeah.
That hasn't been messed up.
I've been playing. I think I played some SimCity 4 and quite enjoyed it.
Yeah,
I just find it's too. I just lose interest though too quickly. I'm like, I can't stand around and wait for this city to build and fuck you and your need for a sewage treatment plant. So I give up on SimCity quite quickly.
Sewage treatment plant is very easy to deal with.
I don't know, whatever it was. The last time I tried to play SimCity, I started and I was like, oh, this is great. I love SimCity. Oh, my God, this is the... Oh, I'm really over this, you bastards. Stop being so demanding.
So the first thing that got me excited about SimCity, the new one, was there were a couple of YouTubes posted up by the developer.
Oh, man, they looked amazing, didn't they?
They looked amazing. And they were talking about how clever the AI was and all the pathfinding stuff.
I dragged one
of
my co-workers into my office to show them. I'm like, look at this. Look, they're making new SimCity. Look at it. Oh, my God, it looks amazing.
But so I had a fire station in my little city called, I called it Ballstown because I could get away with that. They'll asterisk out town names if you go too crazy, but they didn't do anything with balls. I've got Ballstown, Upper Ballstown, and West Ballstown. And basically,
Chris
I'm going
to
fill up my
that,
whole region.
That football player we've talked to, a US football player we've talked about before, named his town Herpes.
Right. Did they asterisk it?
Nope. Yep. He got away with that. He tried a whole bunch of other things, but Herpes he got away with.
Right. Well, so I had a fire station and a problem with fires happening around my town. I think probably every town has problems with fires. I had five fire engines, and just watching the way that they behaved with the fire. For a start, if there were multiple fires going on in my town, all three of my fire engines would go to one house fire instead of distributing themselves around the town. They would park on top of one another without taking any account of clipping. And they also would just sort of loop back and forth when they were driving anywhere. So they just took weirdly longer than they needed to. Like, they'd just go around the block a few times, but, like, literally just go around the block, and then they'd continue on their way. It's just, it's bizarre. It's like whoever coded it was, I mean, they weren't even just a new graduate. They hadn't graduated yet. They'd read a course once about, you know, how to find optimal
paths. They went to Stack Overflow, and they went, how would I write some code to drive a fire engine to a fire?
Yeah.
some dude was like just copied and pasted, just typed something out randomly and went, well, this should probably do it, but you want to test it.
Yeah.
And that's the code that's now in the game.
Yeah. And they
if
also...
If you go searching on Stack Overflow, you'll probably find the question.
They talked a little bit about and some of those YouTubes, which, of course, I haven't watched for months. So, you know, my memory might be shonky. But I seem to recall them talking about the Sims being persistent. And to a degree, that's true. You can click on a Sim, and you can, and you'll see their name, and you'll see kind of if they're happy or not, and where they're going, where they've been, where they've come from. So, like, if they're going to work or if they're going home, where they've been at work. But the persistence is tenuous at best, because they don't have a regular job. They go to any workplace. They go to the nearest workplace, and they just do that job. And then when they're finished at work, they go to the nearest house, and that's their house.
So how do the traffic jams happen then? Because isn't there a whole thing about massive traffic jams and things?
Well, one of those things is that the cars take the shortest route rather than the fastest route. So if you've put in like a 6-lane high volume roadway, and beside it is a dirt road, even if the dirt road is absolutely stacked full of cars, no cars will make it to the 6-volume roadway, because if it's, you know, further away. It's absolutely, it's mental. It's so frustrating watching it. It's just, it's awful. So much about it is just so...
I think my father is a hobbled. Sim. He'll take the most complicated route possible to avoid traffic lights.
Right. I've been known to do that sort of thing from time to time. I seem to recall one time we drove from, I don't even know where, one of our houses. One of the places which we lived at together, I guess. Eden Terrace? And sure. Drove down to like Mission Bay or somewhere. And you got annoyed with me because I just drove along the ridge all the way. And that was a very long route.
Right.
But I thought it was perfectly fast. You know, there's no messing around. Yeah, so as well as offering a free game by way of apology, and these games, some of them, like I said, are actually pretty new releases, so they're almost...
Might not be shit.
They might not be shit, but they're still EA games, so they'll be hobbled, and you'll need to get you'll need to pay for a DLC in order to make them any good, probably. So, you know, who knows, but I guess I get two. So, cool, thanks. I'll take it. Someone who gets none, though, is the CEO of Electronic Arts. His name's John Ricciatiello, and he's been fired.
Well, then.
And removed from the board of directors. Now, it's not necessarily because of the SimCity launch, but maybe because of bigger problems with the company. But part of the problems with the company are the reputation that EA has developed for having really shitty DRM and really crappy DLC that you need to get the game that you've already bought to work the way that you were told it was going to work out of the box. DLC is so customer hostile. You know, day one updates that you really need to buy in order to have, you know, what you expected would be in the box. I hate DLC so much.
There's an article I saw published recently called The Gamer's Bill of Rights.
Yeah.
It's actually based on an earlier thing, but the gist is, I'll read the preamble, not the whole thing. Gamers are customers who pay publishers, developers, and retailers in exchange for software. They have the right to expect that the software they purchase will be functional and remain accessible to them in perpetuity. They have the right to be treated like customers and not potential criminals. They have the right to all methods of addressing grievances accessible to other consumers.
Yeah.
They have the right to the game they have paid for with no strings attached beyond the game and nothing missing from the game. And then this goes on. There's a lot of points about what some of those things mean.
The right to all the benefits that other consumers get is actually pretty important, because something that's been happening is with users who tried to return the game, which I think you have to be able to do in New Zealand, because that is it's not fit for purpose. It's not as described. And it doesn't really matter what the end user license in the box says. New Zealand consumer law says it needs to work.
Yeah, and be fit for purpose and meet the...
People who try to return it, and people who do a credit card chargeback, they've just been getting their accounts closed.
Right. So the warehouse has a... They say that they, because of copyright law, they say, that they don't accept. Here it goes. Restrictions and exceptions resulting from New Zealand copyright laws and health and safety issues means we can't accept refunds of the following things: music CDs, DVDs, PC software, gaming console software, and also for health reasons, underwear and earrings.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would say I understood the underwear and earrings, but I think that not accepting the return of software that is broken and not as described, I think that they cannot refuse that.
Yeah.
As long as you don't keep it installed.
I don't understand. Like, they say resulting from New Zealand copyright law. I've read the Copyright Act. There's nothing in there about not being able to return. I'd love to know what law they claim it is. But if it's faulty, I'm sure if it's faulty, you can still return it, right?
Yeah. It depends on what they would accept as faulty.
I think this is just their general returns policy. I don't know. Anyway.
The thing is that some of those little pirates, they really are scumbags. Those little people who every movie they ever rent, they rip, you know. They do the same thing with new released retail DVDs, I'm sure. But I'm not talking about returning it because I don't like it. I'm talking about returning it because it doesn't work as described.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not fun, and it was described as fun.
Yeah. Fun game. Nope, sorry.
Nope. Nope, that's not correct. The DRM, of course, is justified because of piracy, but of course the pirates will crack it anyway. And so, you know, as we discuss every single time we ever talk about anything involving DRM, it's only the paying customers that get screwed over by it. It's the people who download illegally that they never even see it. So it's interesting to note the oldest torrent on the Pirate Bay, and it's been seeding for 9 years.
What is it?
It's actually a pirated copy of a documentary about the history of Linux and GNU and the free software movement called Revolution OS.
Is it? It's not, I presume, released under a Creative Commons license?
No, it's an illegal copy. It's an illegal copy.
Fascinating.
Yeah. And it's been up since March 31, 2004.
Now, was that the first one that was listed on there, or is it just the only one that's still seeding that's been...
Apparently, it's just the first one that's still seeding. I don't know. Is there any indication in this article about what the first was? Apparently, the oldest torrent file that people are generally aware of is the Matrix ASCII. Is there any indication? What's the first one? The smallest torrent is an Adobe Photoshop crack.
Sure it is.
Let's see.
So Adobe Photoshop crack or malware?
Yeah, probably malware. I mean, it's so easy to get Photoshop now legitimately with all the work at home stuff and so on. I mean, if you've got it at work, you've got it legitimately at home now. So, I mean, why would you do anything dodgy? I just don't know. I don't know. They've spoken. The story is from Torrent Freak, and they spoke to the director of Revolution OS, whose name is... I hate people who... use initials, JTS Moore. Just call yourself John, if that's your name, or Johan. And he has apparently mixed feelings about having the oldest active torrent. He says it's definitely a problem, but I guess there's some satisfaction in knowing that Revolution OS still has appeal for some people 12 years later. So that's nice. That seems like a very reasonable and level-headed response. At the time that they looked at it, it had 4 leeches and 27 cedars. That's a pretty good ratio.
Sweet.
Yep, good for them. The most popular human cell in science has finally been sequenced. It's surprising that it's taken this long, because it turns out that the most popular cell is from a woman called Henrietta Lacks. And it has been being used by scientists in, you know, various studies since the 1950s, and it was involved in the development of a polio vaccine and heaps of other things, and apparently it's contributed to more than 60,000 research papers. Of course, she didn't really live to find out, because it is from cervical cancer. It's a cervical cancer cell. I wonder now, after this much time, if there's kind of been more weight of this stuff cloned and grown in a vat than the weight of her actual body. Maybe true. There may be more of her around now than there was whenever she was alive, but unfortunately less sentient. But it turns out that it's a bit strange. It's got multiple copies of some chromosomes. So it's a bit awkward, actually. Turns out it might not be a very good model to be used. And it's been used very, very widely for, you know, 6 decades. Kevin Long in the chat room suggests that there are probably tons of cells from this gene line, this cell line. It's called a HeLa. They call it HeLa.
Do you feel slightly queasy in the tummy talking about this?
No.
Just me?
Yep.
Maybe it's something else. 45 minutes.
Yep. Wind farm sickness. Actually, it's funny that you talk about feeling queasy just because of something I'm talking about. Wind farm sickness is this idea. I think that they claim it's about like low frequency resonance.
Oh, yeah, pulsing
or something.
With the spinning of the watsits and low.
And there was a bunch of research that was done quite early on before people started talking about this wind farms making them feel sick. And it found that really no one experienced any sort of problems. And then they could go back and talk to those same people after they'd been spoken to about wind farm sickness. And those people would suddenly describe, you know, these symptoms. It looks like it's all psychosomatic. It's, these people are told that they're going to be made to feel sick by the proximity to a wind farm. And so they start to feel sick. Because of it. Now, I would say that there has to be one exception to this, and that is if you are within the shadow of a turbine, because that would be absolutely horrific. Once again, as is the case with virtually everything else on Earth.
You mean the literal shadow?
The literal shadow. Like if the sun passes over the other side of the turbine, there are YouTubes of people who, you know, videos inside their houses of the kind of strobing that they experience.
Oh, that'd be awful.
It is awful, and it would be for hours. I mean, depending on exactly where you were in relation to, you know, the way the sun traveled across the sky. So at different times of year, it'd be better or worse. But it would be for sometimes probably hours a day of this flashing, flash, flash, flash. It would just be terrible. It would be absolutely terrible. I think the wind farms have to be built away from people, actually.
Yeah, that sounds... Ugh.
Easier done in some places than others. But, I mean, you should look at some of those videos because it really is terrible. Absolutely terrible. Things that aren't terrible, I guess.
What's not
Google,
terrible? Tell me something that's not
I'll
terrible.
Tell you something that's not terrible, and then I'll tell you why it's Google Reader. It's not terrible. Google Reader is, I spend probably more time in Google Reader than using any other application because I read a lot of websites. And
even
MobiHun,
or does that not count as an application?
I don't even know if MobiHun has RSS. Let me see. I'd forgotten about MobiHun. You shouldn't forget about MobiHun, though, because MobiHun is absolutely brilliant. Just don't do it at work, seriously. Let me see, does it have RSS?
If you're not familiar with what MobiHun is and you're offended by pornography... Don't try and find out.
Yeah, definitely don't try and find out. It actually sometimes has illegal stuff on it.
Well, probably. It wouldn't surprise me at all. There's quite a few things that are illegal here that aren't illegal in other places.
Yep, urine. So here's an excellent one. And also, it's a lolly scramble, MobiHun. Extreme penis and balls BDSM pics. I didn't know I was going to see
so
that
sorry
today.
To pull this up.
I didn't know I was going to see
Reader.
That. A chubby girl in... No, that's not actually...
Google Reader.
That's not
Google
amazing.
Reader.
So it's Google have announced that they're taking it offline, and they're taking it offline in, like, July, so it's quite soon.
I thought it was later now. Anyway, okay, fine, July, sure.
Unless they've announced an extension.
No, you're probably right. It's probably July. I'm probably thinking of some other thing that happens at some other time in the year.
July. Oh, here we go. So Kevin Long in the chat room says that scientists, this is a quote from I don't know where, scientists have grown some 20 tons of her cells, and there are almost 11,000 patents involving those cells. And that's from 2010, so there could be many more now. 20 tons.
Mm.
20 tons of Henrietta Lacks. She must be the heaviest person ever.
Mm.
Does it still make you feel queasy?
A little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't blame you.
I wonder what our waiters,
if you take it over their entire life.
Well, yeah, if you factor in all the skin cells and things that we lose.
But do you exclude poop?
I think I exclude poop.
It's probably quite a lot.
There's some of poop is food and some of poop is like, you know, used up blood cells and things.
And lots is bacteria, just like us. So much of our body is bacteria.
I don't know. Oh, goodness, that's tricky. Because, I mean, I don't know if you can count poop. I don't know if you can count poop considering you have to eat, like, the food goes in to make the poop. I don't know.
The food goes in to make the cells as well.
I'd be interested just to know on the weight of human body plus, expended cells.
Like hair.
Hair and
fingernail clippings. Cells.
And, yep, fingernail clippings. Yep, so that's somewhere. I'm sure that's somewhere. I want an infographic.
Yeah. So Google Reader is going offline, and this is going to have some serious consequences for a lot of people because the people that post the very best links on Twitter, I bet you'll find most of them are getting those links out of Reader. And I would say that amongst people I know, I haven't been posting so many lately, but I post probably the best links on average.
On average, sure.
On average.
Which means sometimes you post the best and quite often you post the worst, but average.
No, sometimes I post the best and other times I don't post anything.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. I'm amazed by how long it takes for some quite cool stories to make it out to people who aren't me. So for instance, if that overrated dickhead, Juha Saarinen, posts something really interesting, I definitely saw it 2 weeks earlier and decided I wouldn't post it.
Twitter hipster.
Yeah. That's correct. Yeah, that's correct. I've got the beard and everything, but not the skinny jeans. Although, I mean, I pretty much make any jeans look like skinny jeans in terms of, you know, how snug they are.
Next story.
Same story. Because Google Reader is so much better than any other feed reader has been, and that's been the case since about 1997. Everything else either used its infrastructure and its feed APIs and so on, or just stopped existing entirely. There are very few competitors to Reader, and even fewer still that don't rely entirely on its existence themselves. So because all of the air has been sucked out of that RSS ecosystem, it's going to take a little bit of time for the competitors to, number one, recover from the massive influxes of Google Reader, what would we call them? People desperately needing rescue. Feedly, which is one of the competitors, which used, unfortunately for the new users, Reader's APIs, so they need to find replacements. They got something over 500,000 new readers in the space of about 2 days, and that caused a great deal of trouble for their infrastructure. One that I went for, the old Reader, it's very slow compared to Reader. It misses a bunch of the features. So I don't know.
When the Google Reader thing was announced, I briefly went looking for hip domain names that I could register, but I couldn't think of any. I thought if I registered a domain name, then I'd be after that, I'd be more or less compelled to make a Google Reader alternative, and I'm sure I could figure out how to do that.
I felt the same desire to make a replacement, but for people who do a similar thing to us, so that it would put together better lists of stories and maybe make the reading a bit easier, maybe make it easier to sort them out into reading lists. And aside from that, feature a lot of basically the same elements from the interface. And that same user experience that you get with Reader, which is that it's very, very fast. And that if you subscribe to a site that doesn't have an RSS feed, it just fakes it. Because it's a little known fact, Google Reader doesn't require RSS to be available for it to be able to treat a site as if it has feeds. It's very, very clever. But like things, old Reader doesn't even have tagging, and I absolutely need tagging, or discourse is going to stop, basically, put simply. But there are much more serious consequences than me complaining about not having tagging and the free replacement, and that is for people, for instance, in Iran, because they have been able to use Reader to get around censorship in their country, Reader is served off Google's servers. thousands of them around the world. Now, while Google stuff has been blocked from time to time in Iran, it doesn't generally stay blocked. And so because Reader allows you to read stories from sites which are otherwise blocked but can't be blocked itself, it meant that they were able to get that, you know, those stories. And in an earlier incarnation, before Google Plus destroyed the sharing features built into Reader, they were able to also use it sort of as a communication tool by sharing locally, or, you know, sharing to other people that followed them. And add comments that were readable as well. So it's actually been a really useful tool to for people who are suffering in oppressive systems. And so having it go away like this is actually really serious for those people. It's not white wine serious, which is, you know, obviously what is the case for me. It's serious, serious. I mean, those people get killed, you know, worst case scenario. My worst case scenario is it takes a little bit longer for me to read the news, you know. Anyway, so I think it's a big deal, and hopefully Google will reconsider. I wouldn't count on that.
I wouldn't either.
I mean, it would be. I would prefer that they just put some bloody advertising in, and we're able to thereby pay. You know, I'm sure it would generate profit because there must be millions of users. I saw a very interesting. It was on BuzzFeed, and it was a story that compared the traffic that came from Google Plus to the traffic that came from Google Reader to the BuzzFeed network. So they have something like 300 million users, so it's pretty good sample size. What do they say? Do they reveal actual numbers? Oh, their charts are small and stupid.
I saw someone suggesting that they'd noticed a massive influx in readers from, I want to say, Feedly, because the Google ones kind of got hidden behind just google.com. I didn't see them coming in as much.
Yeah. Yeah, it's actually hard to accurately read to record Google Reader traffic. For several reasons. Number one is that Reader generally is used behind SSL, so you don't get referrer stuff. And number two is that you don't see that it was Reader. If you do see the referrer, you don't necessarily see that it was Reader. Now, I don't actually see numbers on this bloody chart, so that's fucking annoying. But the pie chart is pretty hilarious. Let me send it to the
chat room. Pie charts are better without numbers.
Let me send it to the chat room at least. Oh, nothing's better without numbers. So at its peak, there were about 25 million Google Reader referrals. I think that's probably, is that a month or is that a day? That says February 2013, I guess. So that might be for the month, 25 million referrals. Now, the Google Plus referrals, it's very hard to say what the number is because it's just a red line that runs along the back bottom of the graph. So, I mean, maybe it's a couple of thousand. Maybe it's,
it looks like it's under a million.
It's well under a million.
Looks like it'd be maybe
it's 200,000. I think it's no more than 100,000 or 200,000. And so it's, you know, 1% of the size of Reader. That's Google Plus. That's what they're pinning their hopes on. That's what they're keeping. And it's Google Plus was kind of shoehorned into Reader and ruined some of the excellent features that had previously existed in Reader. And yet they're getting rid of Plus.
Oh, well.
It's madness. Dickheads. Fucking Google. It's the internet. Can't be trusted, Google.
So what happens if they decide to kill Gmail one day? We're all fucked.
We are super fucked. I guess I'll just have... I don't even know what I'd do. What would I do?
I can't disentangle myself from Gmail anymore.
I've got so many domains feeding into Gmail.
Yep.
I use the calendar stuff. You know, the shared calendars are brilliant. I have a family calendar, and I wouldn't know when I was doing anything if it wasn't for that.
There's people
because I don't listen.
There's people who make this point that we're, you know, now tied into these services, especially Google.
Yeah.
And they can just take them away when they want to.
Yeah.
If they decide that they're not working for what they want to do anymore. And there's not a lot of, because A, they crush everything around them because they're so massive.
One minute. And
B, we don't have any alternatives.
Yeah.
Next story.
Council considers ban on apostrophes in street signs.
Yes, please.
because of the confusion that the mark causes.
It's not like that's the most confusing thing about street signs.
Its new streets had not contained apostrophes for many years.
Which council?
Devon.
Oh, not even New Zealand. Okay.
No, not New Zealand.
I don't think I've ever seen an apostrophe in a street sign in New Zealand.
I bet there are some. I bet there's something called Selwyn's Soggy Bottom or something. Ooh. Surely. Surely, there must be.
What a
Next
wonderful
story.
Place
to be.
There must be something Five. Else. Oh, this is something from last week. Fluoride halts tooth decay in adults too. So it's basically, it's never too late to start.
Good to know.
Two.
I'll see you in a minute or next week if you stop now. But who would? You'd have to be mad. Goodbye.
You're listening to the weekly show on Sorry. Of course.
All right, we're using that one.
It was once thought that fluoridated drinking water only benefited children who consumed it from birth, says this professor and director of the Oral Epidemiology PhD program at the University of North Carolina. But now it turns out that fluoridated water reduces tooth decay in adults, even if they start drinking it after childhood.
Fluoride's good for everyone.
Yep, especially if you want to have mind control system that works, because I'm pretty sure it's important for that. That's one of the criticisms, isn't it, from those crazy people?
Oh, yeah, I'd stop caring. Oh. No, I stopped listening. Oh, my God, anyway, all right.
Extinct frog that gives birth from its mouth nearly brought back to life.
Oh, this was the Jurassic Park.
This is nearly news. Mike Archer, who is a scientist.
Was that in quotes? Because it sounded scientist. Like you're saying in quotes.
Well, scientist is not actually usually a role title at universities.
Are you sure?
Yeah. So he's probably
I'm
going
to have to rethink
called...
all my university social engineering calls then.
Hey, I'm Dylan. I'm one of the scientists. I need your password for science. I mean, there's no doctor in front of his name or anything. So that would mean that he's a technician, not a scientist. You don't get to be a scientist. You're a professor or a doctor or a researcher, not a scientist. Doesn't make any sense. Anyway, at the University of New South Wales, he's on the cusp of successfully cloning an extinct species of frog called Rheobatrachus. And this is an interesting one because the mother swallows its own eggs and then they hatch and they live as tadpoles in her stomach. And for this to work, she stops producing stomach acid so they don't get digested. And 6 weeks later... live frogs vomit up out of the mother's mouth, which seems like a great way to do it. Anyway, they've been extinct since the 1970s, apparently. Oh, no, they've been extinct since 1983, and it was only first discovered in 1972, so it was one of those ones where there can't have been very many of them
around. They're all gone.
Yeah, look what we found. They're really delicious. Oh, no more. Oh, they were so Moorish. I really want another one. Anyway, so he's found some that have been frozen since then, and he's putting them, you know, cell stuff into eggs of related frogs, but frogs that aren't, you know, this exact same one. And they're getting really close. He is getting really close, this scientist, to having living examples of this formerly, or actually still currently, but hopefully in the future, formerly extinct species, which I think is cool. I think it's a great story. And there is an amazing photo that goes with this story of a frog with its mouth being held open, and inside its mouth is a smaller frog. It's like a nightmare. It's like an acid flashback.
Is that one of the real frogs in question, or is that like some sort of montage? I saw the photo and then skipped along.
Good question.
I hopped along after. Okay.
It's from the University of Adelaide. So maybe it's a real thing. The disappearing frogs. Yeah, is it about the right one? It's a birth of a gastric brooding frog, it says. Photo by Mike Taylor. Tyler. So, yep, that's the real thing. That's what it looks like.
Awesome.
The frog looks too big. I mean, surely there wouldn't be enough frogs in its stomach. There wouldn't be enough. You'd have to have more. Maybe that's why they went extinct, because of this incredibly inefficient way that they have of procreating.
Sounds highly plausible.
Trust me, I'm a scientist, so I know all about these things. Other things that I know all about are these last four stories that I can't really be bothered doing.
Okay, good.
North Korea, man. North Korea. How crazy is all that stuff? Saber-rattling again. But they have nuclear bombs.
They're a funny bunch, aren't they?
So the US have declared that they're going to spend another $1 billion deploying additional ballistic missile interceptors, just to, you know, just in case the Koreans launch, you know, one of their.
But didn't they say that they were completely satisfied that they could currently intercept and destroy any North Korean attack?
We
totally can do it, but we're going to put some more out just in case.
The thing is that during testing, they hit 50%.
Oh, good enough.
Well, it might be good enough. I mean, why not then just fire three?
It's like putting it on the pass line at a game of craps.
Just fire three, because we know that North Korea doesn't have a hell of a lot of these things.
Yeah.
You know, probably five or ten or something.
I'm not entirely convinced they have more than one that can launch at any given time.
I'm not convinced that they have any that can launch. Their history with rocketry is not the greatest. I mean, they were busted with fake missiles, if you'll recall, at one of those big...
Yeah, but they've got that new jet fighter now, so that's good.
They have a lot of underground army as well. I've lost interest in this story. It would be so exciting if there was nuclear war, though, wouldn't it? I mean, we wouldn't be involved, so it'd be... You don't think so? I mean, obviously, a lot of people would die, but then the end result would presumably be that all those North Koreans would be free. The ones that survived, they'd be free.
Yeah, I guess. I think... I don't know. It might be interesting to observe from a distance. I don't think I want to see it, though.
Are we far enough away?
Probably not.
I guess, I mean, the people that they're most likely to attack, obviously South Korea, Japan, and the US, and they're not going to fire anything in the other direction, because the only reason they exist is because they've got China's backing.
I wouldn't even bet on the US, really. I mean, obviously they'd be the best target, but the furthest away.
But the thing is that I think that if Japan are ever attacked again, they will move on from their, you know, their recent historical policy of being pretty much just a defensive force. There's no reason they can't make mechs. I'm pretty sure. I mean, they could build a giant robot army, and the only reason they haven't,
it might just be hidden away.
That's an extremely good point, Dylan. I'm really pleased that you made it.
But it's entirely possible that somewhere in Japan there's a giant underground bunker full of battle mechs.
I don't see why that is. That seems implausible to anyone. They've probably just got thousands of glitter boys.
Was it the Toyota? Is it the Toyota or the Honda SMO? It's probably they're all basically that with a machine gun on them.
That seems like it would be pretty terrifying.
Yeah, it would.
Is that a man running towards us who desperately needs a toilet? Wait, he's shooting. He looks like he's carrying a poop in his trousers.
The US version of that is basically an autonomous Segway.
The US versions of robots are so unrefined, but they sure do have big guns and Hellfire missiles and so on, right?
No, I think it's like an autonomous Segway with a Dodge V8 engine.
Yeah, Big Dog that does have an internal combustion engine is the greatest robot. It's terrifying and creepy, and I'm sure that's probably going to have Hellfires on it as well.
Well,
I don't know if Hellfires
missiles on everything, really.
Why wouldn't you put missiles in everything? Look at how well they work for Iron Man. Why doesn't Iron Man just make a missiles suit that's just all missiles? Because, I mean, do you remember in the first one when that tank fired at him and he just fired like a little missile at it? Why not have more of those missiles?
Maybe it's probably just a space concern. There's only so much you can have.
Well, why mess around with having legs that you know, operate as legs?
No idea. Seems crazy.
And he's got Jarvis. He should just have a lot of those missiles, and he could just send them off to wherever there's trouble. If he had had more of those missiles, he would have been able to take care of Ironmonger in a much more satisfying way than he did.
I'm just scrolling down my list of various favourites tweets that I put aside to see if there's anything I wanted to mention. There was an amazing thing on BBC earlier in the week or last week where a journalist reporting from China was arrested.
Oh, God, this is amazing.
On live TV.
This is amazing.
Because they had some sort of, you know, backpack-based cellular live transmission equipment rather than like a big satellite van.
Yep.
So they got arrested. The reporter and his cameraman got detained, put in a van and taken to a police facility, and the entire time they were broadcasting live back to the BBC and doing like a live cross to the BBC anchor telling them what was happening, and it seemed like the Chinese police had no idea that what they were doing was actually being broadcast live.
Yeah. It was fucking Orwellian as well.
They were taping it and that they'd be able to review the tape later or something.
But And that's all really – it's good that they were broadcasting live, because if they hadn't been, the tape – I mean, it literally would have been taken. The memory cards really would have been taken. And, I mean, there must be many cases where that has happened.
I think the Chinese are quite careful with Western media, though, because they know that the fact that that's happened gets reported. Yeah. So they don't do that so often. What they do, as I understand it with Western media, is they just – manage them very carefully so that hopefully they don't actually report or, you know, don't actually shoot anything they're not allowed to use before in the first place.
Yeah.
Stop them from shooting it so you don't have to take it off them.
Yeah, the same thing that happens in North Korea. Didn't work here. Yeah. And so one of the most jaw-dropping, mind-boggling and frankly Orwellian things that happens in that story, you can probably come up with the exact quote, but they said something like, you're not allowed to shoot here, and the journalist said, no, we have permission to shoot here. But where they had permission to shoot was where they were picked up, not where the police had then taken them to.
They got picked up in Tiananmen Square and moved to a police station within the Forbidden City.
Yeah.
And so they were by that point, they were doing the little live report from the police station in the Forbidden City, and the cops like, well, you don't have permission from the park management here to film.
Yeah, which is ridiculous. You brought us here. We don't want to be here. We want to be back at Tiananmen Square, which is where the story was that we were covering. Yep. Anyway, madness.
I don't know what the outcome of it was. I didn't see it. I haven't looked at a follow-up.
Yeah.
It was interesting to watch.
Remember this, New Zealand. Remember these stories. Look at how ridiculous some of this stuff is.
This technology is fucking crazy, though, because I don't know if you remember all the Occupy stuff and that Australian fuckwit in the embassy in London. All those people just broadcasting live constantly. I mean, most of them are indie media types. And my only problem with indie media is that the people there are nothing even remotely close to independent.
Yeah. And they're not actually journalists, are they?
No, they're just people with video cameras who shout at the cops.
Yeah.
But regardless of that, it was the technology that makes that possible is just amazing.
Protest on Simon Street when the police got a little bit violent.
And if you'd had slightly better gear with like four cellular modem sticks on it, you could have broadcast in, you know, full frame rate, full HD.
Yeah, and not had my battery absolutely burn itself out in about 20 minutes. Yeah.
So that was, I'm just scrolling down my list, blah, blah, blah. Food bag, no, I don't talk about that again.
Don't you? Because there is an aspect of that that I think is quite interesting that we can talk about, and that is disclosure. And so I think that if... Now, there was a demand from what's his name, Drinan, that or various people that people should have put a ##ad on those.
Yeah,
I don't think that's true.
No,
because I don't think that those were what people think of as ads. They were in a margin. They were in a grey area. But if everyone had disclosed that they'd been given a free, furnished, complimentary products. Then I think that would have been sufficient. So this is something that often happens with technology reviewers and so on. You know, they'll say that, you know, LG flew me to Tokyo. Does that make sense? Or are they from Korea, aren't they? Where are they?
Look at the technology reviewers we follow on Twitter.
Yeah.
And if they are tweeting about a new phone, you know, they don't need to say that, you know, Samsung's given me this new phone.
Yeah.
Because you know that Samsung's given them that new phone.
And you also can be pretty confident that they're going to give it back.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, maybe I don't think it makes that much difference whether they have to give it back or not.
Yeah.
In this case, they get a 1 month. In this case, they got food that they could have for 1 week.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like they got a year-long sign-up or something. So there's that. I think a few of the tweets I saw with regard to my food bag kind of were obvious that they were, you know, people said, I'm trialing my food bag and thanks to my food bag for this thing. You know, I think that was kind of obvious. But, it's, you know, there's 140 characters and it's what do you put in there. And I don't think anyone... Yeah, it's difficult.
I think that in an ideal world, people do disclose. They do say, hello, my dear friends who follow me and know me every day, which I mean, I've followed almost none of those people. My food bag have given me a free one for this week, and let me tell you about it.
Yeah, I don't even think it needs to be that formal. I guess if you just said, I'll call my food bags, just sent me a food bag, and then another tweet later on saying, look what I made.
Yeah, but that doesn't reveal that it was gratis. Necessarily, what? Does it? And I think that actually is an important consideration.
Yeah, I guess so. I just don't think it needs to be that formal.
If people had paid for it, there would be no question that it's... I mean, look, people can tweet whatever they want because you only follow the people if you like their tweets, right?
If people had paid for it, it obviously wouldn't have happened in that sort of weirdly synchronized fashion.
And no one could have a problem either, frankly.
No.
Yeah. The issue is that they were free and that it was a bit of a storm, apparently. Even though I only followed one or two people who had it, the storm that I saw was the reaction, the negative.
My favourite thing about that whole story was me being egregiously misparaphrased anonymously in the Herald.
No, surely not. You mean a story that you actually know the details about in the background turns out to not be entirely accurately reported by mainstream media? No, that's the first time that's ever happened.
Yes.
Hmm.
Anyway, it was an interesting thing. I don't know. The internet's a big, scary, wide world. I don't have a problem with. Whoops, sorry. I don't have a problem with things like that. It's. I certainly, you know, would like to see the ad hashtag of people being paid to tweet. I don't think anyone is.
Yeah. Not yet.
Well, I know there's been some cases overseas. I don't think anyone is here.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Otherwise, you know, from the PR perspective, you give people things because you want them to talk about them, and if they do, well done. I don't think you need to. Yeah, it's tricky. And you think about, you know, people who are on the A list or the B list or even the C list.
In New Zealand, it starts at C.
Yeah, well, get a bunch of free shit all the time.
Yeah.
In the hope, you know, in the hope that they might just happen to mention it.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times they don't.
Yeah. I don't follow any of those people on Twitter. None of them are interesting. They're all vacuous.
You say, I reckon you do. I reckon you probably follow some people who get quite a bit of free shit.
Goodie bags?
Not about goodie bags, but, you know, invites to parties and product launches.
I mean, I follow a couple of people who you'd call journalists, but not because they're journalists.
Not even because they're journalists,
though. Obviously, Ben gets those invites, and from time to time he's asked me to go to those things, and I never have. Juha Saarinen and... Damien Christie.
Yep.
Christ. I feel like I've Chris Keel. God damn it. sorry, Chris. Apparently it's late. Apparently. Good enough. You know, all those people I guess are in that industry. So I mean, of course they get you know, they have loud voices, you know, because some of them buy ink by the barrel and some of them are on the telly. And so, you know, naturally, people with stuff that they want to get out in front of people, you know,
it's fascinating. Like I kind of wish I was still working in PR now that Twitter exists because, you know, the whole thing about PR, well, marketing and PR is generally, you know, the holy grail is always word of mouth.
Yeah.
And word of mouth now is basically Twitter and Facebook, and it's so accessible in a way that actual word of actual mouth never was.
Yeah.
The best you could do before was trying to get, you know, people like television presenters and personalities to, you know, try and get your product in front of them in the hope. But then they've got ethical concerns, you know, because if you're paying someone like, let's imagine you're Mike Hosking, for example.
Yeah.
And a company is paying you $60,000 a year to be their ambassador.
Yeah.
it would be inappropriate for you on your national television show to make references to that company.
Yeah, that would never happen. That would be so corrupting for that to happen. Surely someone who fell into a trap like that, surely they could never work in broadcast in New Zealand.
And even on a smaller scale, if you're, you know, if you're a journalist on a Good Morning or something and people send you free stuff as not part of your job, I suppose, then it would be inappropriate if you mention it from a work perspective.
Yeah.
But if you're just a person on the street who happens to have a lot of good friends and someone gives you something so that you can tell your friends about it, that's cool.
Yeah.
And that's, I think Twitter kind of is in that little area.
Yeah.
And then you see some of the people who did get the My Food Bag have actually, you know, as well as their tweets that they wrote sort of in the heat of the moment as they were playing with it, have now written more, more staid reviews of the product. And
have you been given one yet?
No, I don't think I'll get one.
Because you're prepared to talk about it enough with, even without having the thing.
Yeah, that's right. They don't need to give me one.
You're a anyway. Cheap date, Dylan.
Very.
Yeah. Basically, you get in the car.
Yep.
And you say, pretty much. Wait, get in the car. That would take the bus and I might blow you in the back seat. So tax. Speaking of getting blown in the back seat, Bill English, the Right Honourable, business groups and the opposition were yesterday celebrated. Now, here's the thing. This is a story where there are differing interpretations of what even the facts are. But so the government was proposing adding fringe benefit tax to company-provided car parking.
Yep. So if you had a job and your job included a car park,
yep,
then there would be a market valuation of what that car park was worth, and yep, you would be taxed for that amount of money.
Yep. Which, you know, all seems like bullshit to me, frankly. But, you know, there you go. So it was expected that it would raise about $17 million, put that into the government's coffers every year. Now, depending on who you believe, it may have cost up to $30 million in terms of compliance costs and collection costs and so on. And so, I mean, obviously that doesn't add up. There's another claim that it would have cost more like $3 million than $30 million. So it's hard to say exactly which of those figures is right. But
let's just quickly sum up, you know, build a summary of the groups that were opposed to this proposal. They included Labour. Labour unions.
Yeah.
And the Employers and Manufacturers Association.
So, I mean, they've never agreed before, but
I think if you've got the Labour unions and the Employers Association against you,
yep,
it's not a really good idea.
Yeah. Apparently there's also a proposed laptop and smartphone tax, and it sounds like they've been dropped.
I think it's difficult, isn't it, when you think, you know, there are things that are obviously perks of the job. Getting a work laptop and a work phone are kind of perks. Having a workplace where you get a car park, that's a perk. But yeah, they're not really like, it doesn't, just, they're not fringe benefits in the way some other things are.
Yeah.
But anyway, do you get taxed for company cars?
Yeah.
Does it depend on the structure of how you, you know, I guess it's part of your remuneration package.
Remuneration?
Oh, fuck off. We've been down this road before. I'm not saying it right. I'm going to start saying performance now.
That's right. How a programmer gets by on $16,000 a year? I'll tell you how. You move to Malaysia and work remotely on the internet.
So there's a thing called freelancer.com where you can pitch things you want programmed or whatever. And the pitches that come in there are cheap.
Mm.
I was because there's some stuff that I've wanted to do for a piece of software that I'm doing, and it's just, frankly, it's beyond my meager little mind. Mm. And I've got quotes to do it, and it's not uncomplex stuff. It's building a DLL library essentially.
Yeah.
To do some moderately complex interfacing, and people saying, "Oh, I'll do it for $150."
Far out.
I don't know if I want to pay you that little to do this.
Yeah.
Not going to do it at the moment anyway, but craziness. Yeah, and the things you see people complete on there for what they complete them for. But they're all, you know, they're all from India and Bangladesh and Malaysia.
Yeah. I mean, if you've spent any time in Southeast Asia, I mean, I haven't been everywhere, but, you know, more recently Indonesia and Thailand, You know, it's possible to live fairly inexpensively. And if you have, you know, even a pretty modest New Zealand income, if you are living up there, you'd be living pretty well. You know, big house, probably, you know, help around the place.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a great idea. If you can do the work from anywhere, then, you know, why do it from an expensive nation when you can do it from an inexpensive nation? If it's, you know, a beautiful tropical paradise, as well as being inexpensive.
Well, it's interesting, though, when you think, it's the outsourcing thing. It's
outsource yourself.
People can do that. Well, yeah, I suppose. But people can do the work. I suppose. Yeah, I guess that's the thing. If you're competing against people in India doing your job for less money, why don't you go to India and do it for more, slightly more money than they do?
Yeah.
But much less than you do now, I don't know.
I probably wouldn't be excited to do it from India, but somewhere like Thailand or Vietnam or somewhere, that might be quite fun. I remember one of the guys from the Pirate Bay, he went and lived, I think, in Vietnam or Cambodia or somewhere quite a lot. I think his wife was from there. And so he just went down there and he, you know, continued to work on the site.
Yep.
I think I've done all my stories.
Yeah, I had none to start with, so it's just got worse and worse.
Now this is my last one, just so I've got a full house. Parents win fight to name health workers. So
I call you Nursey Big Boobs. Is that what you're talking about?
That's heaps better, actually. that's way better than the real story. The real story sucks.
Fish and chips.
Sorry,
and chips.
The show is cancelled. Beep.